This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. The Malaysia Human Development Report is a study commissioned by the United Nations Development Programme and it was released in November 2014. It aims to provide an independent assessment of Malaysia's development policy choices in its quest to achieve developed status by 2020. 13 national experts contributed research and insights into all aspects of the Malaysian economy. We started with Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya. We also had a law expert in last week. And we have in the studio with us Dr. Madeline Burma. She's an associate professor in the Faculty of Economics and Management. We're going to be discussing the role and concerns of ethnic minorities in the development process. Welcome to the show, Dr. Madeline. How are you today?
Hey, I'm okay. Thank you very much.
Dr. Madeline, the segment on ethnic minorities in the report begins with the issue of the definition.
Right.
We often use the terms indigenous. We use the term orang asal. We use the term ethnic minority. Bumiputra, very interchangeably. I mean, we're very comfortable using all of it without realizing that there is a big difference. Then what is the difference?
Okay, one is what we call the political definition. The Bumiputra and non-Bumiputra is what sometimes we term as the political definition because it was not in the constitution. Now, in the constitution, we have the ethnic, like Malays. They will call you the Bumiputra or the pre-Bumi of Sabah and Sarawak. These are part of the constitution. But when you use the term Bumiputra and non-Bumiputras, that was never part of the Malaysian constitution. So, but in terms of politics, we hear a lot of this term called Bumiputra, non-Bumiputra. And since 1990, we have another term. They call it Bumiputra minorities. Mm-hmm. Now, this term have brought about new definitions. To us, it's a new definition in terms of, all the while we have only heard of this dichotomy, just Bumi and non-Bumi. But now suddenly, what is this? There's a Bumiputra minority. And then recently we heard the term orang asal. And then we have a lot of other new terms that have been used interchangeably. So you're right in that sense. And as I said, one is in the constitution, but the other one is political and also socially, we do use this term. And if you go to Sabah and Sarawak, we have the term orang asal, and then we have the all the other ethnic definition. So Malaysia is very much clouded by, we are very much defined by ethnicity.
Of course, how does ethnicity define a country, really? Have we taken it a step too far?
Yeah, all right. When we talk about ethnicity, you see, I used to ask my student, as a lecturer, I asked my student, why is it so important for us to be defined as whether you're Malay or an Iban? I'm an Iban. And then they said, because of the economic attachment to it, opportunities attached to it. Now, if there is no opportunities or the attachments to it, I don't think people are bothered about it. For example, if you're Bumiputra, there is a kind of a special rights to it. And a non-Bumi, well, to a certain extent, they said, we don't have that right. So that's why in Malaysia, it is very, very much defined by ethnicity. The first thing, for example, if you see an accident on the road, the first thing they will ask you, Melayu, Cina? What I really, like I told my student, I pity myself being Iban. Nobody will ever ask, is that an Iban? It's always along that line. And it's already in the psyche of Malaysian, our psyche, you know? I mean, that's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. And coming from Sarawak, I find it a bit disturbed when I first came here. Because you have the Malays, the Chinese, and the Indians. And where do we fit into that story? But later, then it's, as I said, you know, Malaysians are, I think we are one of those, in this world probably, you know, there's so much ingrained in our mentality that everything is almost defined by ethnicity. That's a good point, and that's the negative side too.
What got you going writing this paper?
Okay, I'm an academic first. I'm an academic. I've always been, my research, as an academician, we have specialization. So my specialization has always been research on rural development, poverty. Okay, poverty is my field of expertise. And when I started to look into poverty issues, that's when I started to realize that a high percentage of this poor, you know, the incidence of poverty is very high among the indigenous community, be it in Sabah, in Sarawak, or in Peninsula Malaysia, the Orang Asli. So I start looking into these issues because nowadays, people are not really that interested in poverty. People are more concerned about, you know, finance, you know, doing modeling. In economic terms, we love to model, you know, like finance data is easily available. But this kind of research is very difficult because, you know, it's something you take you you know, days and nights and really out in the rural areas. We're not just talking about rural, we're talking about the interior of Sabah and Sarawak. I mean, this research has brought me right up to the very end of, well, not all parts of Sabah and Sarawak, but I had that little opportunity. It sounds so, you know, people tend to romanticize it. Ooh, bestnya. But actually, when you're doing it, it's a very tough job in a sense that you have to be in the field, you have to listen to these people. But this is the only opportunity for us to, what do you call it, to hear the, you know, the voice of the voiceless people, people you don't really hear from.
Did you also think this is something you wanted to pursue because you are an Iban yourself?
In a way, yes, because I had a little opportunity. So, because, like, for example, you see, when I first came to work at UKM, you know, we don't have University of Malaysia Sabah, or we don't have University of Malaysia Sarawak. Mm-hmm. So somebody needs to do something there. So I decided to take up this, what do you call this, this kind of research. So I have been doing that since in the mid-1980s until now. Of course, poverty then was just rural poverty. Now they have brought poverty, we call it the internationalization of poverty. You know, our neighbors coming here to work, and they will fill up all the, you know, the lower rungs of our society. And these are also areas that I'm concerned about.
I mean, you know, we've also got the urban poor.
Yeah, we are talking about the urban poor. And the marginalized groups, like, you know, sometimes international migrants, you know, they are here, but nobody really cares about them.
Yeah. And when you were doing all this research, what did you take away from your findings?
Oh, gosh, that is a very interesting question. My students always ask me, Dr. Madeline, after, you know, you go out to the field, what? You know, I've learned that, you know, ethnicity is just what we academics look at. When you're poor, nobody really cares whether you're Malay, you're Chinese, you're Iban, you're Indian. I've seen poor Chinese, really poor Chinese. And I've seen really, really poor Malays, poor Iban. So at the end of the day, you know, everybody is the same in that context. So when we do policies, to a certain extent, maybe the ethnic dimension, we should not be too much focus on it. Maybe at one point, yes. But now we should look at poverty. You know, poverty is something that, you know, if you're poor, you're poor. It doesn't really matter whether you're Malay or Indian or Chinese. Because the way we look at it, things now, everything is ethnicized. Mm-hmm. So as if only the Bumiputras are poor. But to me, after doing some research myself, you know, when you try to deal with poverty, deal it on a basis where, based on needs and rights, you know, not because of their ethnicity.
Why,
of course.
Yeah. Why the focus on Bumiputra minorities?
Okay. That is one ethnic, if you look at all...
And who is a Bumiputra minority?
Okay, thank you very much. The term Bumiputra minority came into the public domain or public discussion when it came out in the year 2000. That was Tun Mahathir's time. There was a lot of, what do you call it, undercurrent that was going on then. When the new economic policy ended in 1990... right? So when it ended, so they make a study, then they found out, the Bumiputra has improved a bit, you know, compared to what was achieved in the late 1970s, you know. So within a span of 20 years, okay, the Bumiputra have achieved a bit. And that's when suddenly the Ibans were saying, the Bidayu, the Melanaus, and what we define as Bumiputra minorities were saying, hey, you can't lump us together with the Malays, you know. Yes, you have Malays millionaires, but where are we? So that's when the group was saying that maybe we should not be lumped together as with the Malays. So you see, what happened in Malaysia, we have these three categories, Chinese, Indian, and Malays. Mm-hmm. So the Malays will be the Bumiputras. And we, or rather the Bumiputra minorities, these are, when we say Bumiputra minorities, they refer to the, you know, the pribumi of Sabah and Sarawak plus Orang Asli in Semenanjung. The Malays, Muslim Malays, will be considered as Bumiputra majority then.
Right.
All right. So then suddenly there is this dichotomy within the Bumiputra itself. So the Bumiputra minorities were saying, we have not achieved what the Malays have achieved, the Malay Muslims have achieved. The people in Sarawak were saying, the Ibans, they are the majority. In Sabah, the Kedah and Dusun are the majority. We are Bumiputras, but yet we are not, you know, they call it, what about us? You know, yes, you all have achieved so far. Look at the university entrance. We're not even comparing with the non-Bumis here. You see, this is what the policies have created. You know, you dichotomize a lot of things. The yin and yang, yeah. Bumis, non-Bumis, Malays, non-Malays. So now, this is exactly what we are receiving right now in the year 2015 now. Suddenly, we hear everybody talking about things that are, in the past, the Malays were not question. But now they are questioning, I'm a poor Malay, or I'm a Kelantanese Malay, I'm a, you know. So we are so ethnicized in almost everything that we're doing. I feel very, very disturbed by it because, but on the other hand, I do know that the government has done its best in terms of trying to address the problem. But now with civil society coming in, we also need to hear voices also, you know, from our civil society, because new issues are emerging that have not emerged in the old days. Like I was saying, Bumi Putera minorities, who have heard about them?
Yeah.
We know Penan, but there is also the Punan. We have the Bukit, we have the Ukit. Some of them only about like 300 left in Sarawak. See? You know, when I talk to my student, I said, Doctor, we only know, you know, Malays, Melayu, Melayu, China and India. That's it. Yeah?
And in terms of poverty elimination, I mean, we've spoken about how Malaysia's poverty alleviation initiatives have focused on the bottom 40%.
Yes.
Recently, we're always talking about the bottom 40%.
Right.
Now, would Sabah and Sarawak ethnic minorities benefit from this?
Yes, in terms of policy, you know, I mean, it is very clearly stated that it's the bottom 40%. But then there's a lot of debate that's been going on because they said the majority of those in the bottom 40% would be people from Sabah, Sarawak and our Orang Asli. Yeah. But there's also the other group, you know, the marginalized groups. There are people like women, you know, single, woman-headed family households, and they're also the OKUs and things like that. So they are also somehow included in it. But until and when we have specific policies that is meant targeted at based on needs and rights, you know, it will still be a kind of a blanket thing, you know. So I would think that, yeah, it is a move away from the old way of doing things, shifting towards the bottom 40%. In the old days, it's always about boomies, right? Yeah. Boomies and non-boomies. So now they say, let's move to the bottom 40%. I mean, to a certain extent, I kind of appreciate that because it's moving away. But on the other hand, people are still saying that, you know, the boomies will still benefit from it. But this time, it's going to be the Bumi Putera minorities of Sabah and Sarawak. But let's see. I mean, I'm quite optimistic in that sense.
Why do you think policies have not reached out to the Bumi Putera minorities? I mean, the affirmative action has been there.
Yeah, it has been there for the last God knows how.
From the 1970s.
70s, right? Until now is 2015. We are going to the last phase of our development plan. We're heading towards the 11th
Malaysia plan.
Now,
yeah.
If you don't ask me, to me, there is nothing wrong with the policies. Is the implementation and the monitoring. Because when you look at the, what you call the new economic policy, it clearly states there, eradication of poverty irrespective of race or ethnicity. So if you're Indian, you're Chinese, you're Iban, if you're poor, you should be helped. Now, the other one was the restructuring of the society. So, of course, that involved modernization, which is a bit more difficult because that involves, you know, giving opportunities to the less handicapped in that sense. And at that time, it was the Bumi Putras. But now people are no longer just talking about what they call it horizontal inequality. Horizontal means between Malays and non-Malays or between Bumis and non-Bumis. We are now talking about what we call intra-inequality within the Malays, within the Chinese, within the Indians. Now, the rich Indians and the poor Indians, the rich Chinese and the poor Chinese, the rich Malays and the poor Chinese. The issue is no longer just limited to, it's the poor Malays against the rich Chinese, the way we are being taught now. Now, in the academic circle, this is what we call shifting away from the inter-inequality to intra-inequality. And this is really not easy because all the years we have been focusing so much on this ethnic issue, you know, giving the impression like the division is between the Bumis and the non-Bumis. Then suddenly now we are faced with this situation that this is actually within the community itself. So I think on that score, this is why I think the new economic model is trying to address that bottom 40%. So it's, if you look at it as a vertical thing, so the issue now, let us tackle anybody that's below that 40%. Now the next question is, what 40%? So that needs another calculation. Like our poverty line index, there's a lot of discussion. Some people say the 800, that's a bit too low.
Yeah.
I mean, if you give an 800, almost everybody, like, you know, I mean, but in KL, you can't even survive with 3,000 ringgit. My students were screaming. They were telling me, dulu PTPN, okay. Now that we're working, we're earning about $3,000. Our rental is already $1,500. Transport and blah, blah. So the cost of living and everything. But then, as I said, what needs to be done is to look into this intra intra inequality.
Yep. And then laterally to look at the 40%.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Intra and then horizontal at the bottom.
Yep.
We're discussing ethnic minorities in the development process. Dr. Madeleine Burma from University Kebangsaan Malaysia in the studio with me. She's written, contributed a paper to the Malaysia Human Development Report. If you have a question for her, send it through at 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, Dr. Madeleine Burma, Associate Professor of the Faculty of Economics and Management, University Kebangsaan Malaysia. She's Iban ethnicity of origin. See, we're not supposed to be talking about ethnic groups here. But, you know, interesting that you've embarked on this research on, you know, the really poor poverty has been your focus very much. We're discussing ethnic minorities in the development process. You know, you argue, Dr. Madeleine, that continuing the path of race-based policies as the foundation of economic policy will cause more harm to the Bumiputera community. What did you mean by that?
Okay, what I know it's a bit controversial in that sense, because all the while we have been following the path of using this dichotomy of Bumi and non-Bumi. But things have changed. You know, we have been on that path for the last, like, 30 over years. And we have seen how the impact on, you know, the Bumiputeras have moved far ahead. But we're looking at Bumiputera within the Bumiputera. You know, we're not looking at it just across the, comparing them with the non-Bumis. Yes, we have achieved so much, you know. I mean, in terms of education, in the old days, you have not seen it. It is good in the sense that we need this kind of policies to kind of, give the kind of equality that we want in a country. You know, I always remember when someone was asking me, you know, you cannot imagine a Bumiputera or a Malay feeling poor in their own country. So that kind of feeling is a very, until and when you are in that position, yes, we have gone through that and we have given almost everything of, in the case of Malaysia, all the kind of support that was needed to address that has been given. Now, things have changed. Now we have, you know, educated Bumiputras, those who have gone overseas probably, and they are talking about rights now. You know, they have seen, they said, you know, it's not just the Malays that are poor or just the Bumiputras. Now they said, there are also other ethnic groups, so we cannot see like that. Why do we look at it like I was saying just now? Anybody who is poor, let's just help them. You know, if you go out in the streets and you find that they are poor people, irrespective of whether they're Iban, they're Bedayu, or whatever. But that doesn't mean that we should stop supporting those who are really in need. Like, if the Penan are in need, yes, by all means. And if there is a Malay who is really in need, yes, by all means. But now we need to move a bit away from this ethnicity thing, to me. I mean, I'm not representing University Kebangsaan. I'm just looking at it from a person who has done some work on this, what do you call this, poverty research and to a certain extent, inequality. Because how long are we going to adopt this kind of approach, you know? Because it has created, to a certain extent, a lot of pain, you know? Pain in the sense that some Malays feel that we are happy with what we have achieved, but some are carrying the burden of that NEP. Some of them have said, I'm doing well, not because of the Dasar Ekonomi Baru, not because of the new economy. I'm just good, and that's why I am here, not because I'm a Malay. So,
and I've worked hard.
Yeah. And I work hard for it. They are. And I do see them. I met some of them. And now the non-Bumis, on the other hand, they said, I've not benefited anything, although the new economic policy, the new development policy, the new vision, the national vision policy says that, you know, we have that right. But where are we now? People are talking about rights now, you know. So I think, as we have discussed earlier, the government have implemented the new economic model with the hope of addressing that. And to a certain extent, the mention of ethnicity was not there. They used the term, the bottom 40%. Yes. In the past, it was always been, you know, Bumi, non-Bumi.
Just to throw you off a little, where does human rights fall into all of this?
Oh, this is interesting, because when we talk about poverty, it is all about rights. So it's not just based
education
on...
Education is
It is your right. Right to basic amenities is your right. So these are issues that, you know, people in the development circle, I'm trained in development economics, we have been talking about it for quite some time, you know, in a sense that it's not just based on needs, you know, not because I need it, but if you are a Malaysian, you are a poor person, what are your rights? Huh? Rights to education, rights to, all, as you mentioned, you know, rights to, you know, basic amenities. Yeah? So now if you look, you go to our rural areas, if you can go Sabah, Sarawak, look at our roads, look at our access to our basic amenities. Yes, some of them have access to it, but I mean, we saw it on national TV, we've read data is available there. Yes, the government has done, to a certain extent, they have done a lot. But I'm sure more needs to be done, you know, especially in Sabah. We don't have to wait until election time. It is their rights. It is their rights of these people. So don't have this thinking that, some people said that, you know, oh, they don't really need it, you know. They're quite happy with what they are. It's not for us to decide whether they're happy or they're not happy. It is our responsibility to provide those basic amenities to them.
And, you know, when you talk about education, it seems to be the root cause of poverty and economic marginalization.
Yes, it is.
How can we improve this process to make sure, you know, ethnic minorities, just based on your research that you've done in Sabah and Sarawak, is education available to most of the children in those areas?
Of course, if you compare to Peninsula Malaysia, we're very, very, in terms of accessibility, we're talking about one quantity and the other one is the quality. Quality is very much lacking. And I do hope that more needs to be done in terms of improving the quality of education, the teachers and everything. There's a lot of issues related to teachers where people say they don't want to be transferred to Sabah and Sarawak, you know, all these rural...
Doctors as well.
Yeah, you know. Oh, gosh. You know, the size of Sabah and Sarawak has always been an issue. A lot of people say, you know, policymakers are saying, you know, we spend 1 million to build a school in Peninsula Malaysia. The amount of students there are like a certain percentage. But if you put in Sabah and Sarawak, it's really very difficult. But to me, that's not really a good excuse. But efforts have been made. I must admit that we're not saying that no schools are made. But we do read, if you look at the papers, we do sometimes on our national TV, they showed how these kids have been walking like 4 hours to go to school. I don't blame them if they choose some way to go and start looking for durian or whatever along the way. But, you know, for me, it's not only the government that should play its role, you know, the private sector and also the community. So this is something that we should look into because nowadays people are not just looking at government as that band player, of course, as much as the government wants to play that role, but the community also and people like us, you know, in the university, what are we playing? You know? We have played our part other than, you know, when you talk about government, like, for example, tuition, you know, and people in the urban centres, tuition is already part of their life. I cannot imagine people in those rural. I think school holidays means go to the jungle, find fruits. Like our Penan kids, you know, the government, like the state government of Sarawak, I provided transportation and things like that. But when it's fruit season, it's fruit season.
But then, you know, it begs the question, how do you balance the need to preserve a way of life versus economic development?
Fantastic question. This is a PhD question, you know. We have always have this problem of trying, you know, to balance it. For example, I give you a very simple example, the Penans. There are people who argue, why are you so obsessed of trying to bring them to modern living?
Yes.
Because, you know, they are happy. I'm using a quotation here. They are happy. Now, one thing that I've learned is that, as I said, it is our responsibility to provide those avenues or those opportunities. Now, it is for the Penan to choose. The problem is, if you do not provide the facilities, that is where it is a problem. You see, we cannot do policies and think that, oh, the Penans are happy. They are very happy in the jungle. They're like, they walk 7 days, 7 nights. So why do they want to go to school? So we don't have to provide them with school. But that is not the responsibility of... It's not for us to think on behalf of the Penan. Most important thing, okay, we have this school. Of course, we cannot have one school for every community of Penan because they are very nomadic. These are the Penan, the nomadic ones. But they do have a centralized school. But it is our responsibility to provide that. Now, it is their choice. The most important thing is to create that opportunity. So that, similarly, in the case of rural industrialization, you know, people said, whatever do we do, the rural youth will definitely move to the urban centers. It will create rural urban migration. Now, if you have that kind of mentality, we will forever forget about what the rural sector can do. So we say, okay, never mind, let's not do anything there. But what we have learned along the way is that let's give them an opportunity. So for those who choose to stay, there is a place for them to work. Not everybody out of 100, probably 20 will stay, you know, to stay and work in the plantation sector, or maybe work in the paddy fields and everything. But that should not stop us from developing the rural sector. So this balance is, of course, very difficult in terms of culture, what you have mentioned. On one hand, we love to keep them. When I said we are the outsiders, you know. We want them to be part of, you know, sometimes we can to be like museum pieces, you know, for us to enjoy. But sometimes, on the other hand, we also need to create opportunities for them, you know, because now they have moved into an economy, what they call is the commoditized economy. Money is an essence. They need cash. So if you don't provide those opportunities, they will not have access to it. No, it's nice to have them. Like sometimes in the old days, our tourism advertisement or our TV, or they like to showcase, you know, they will show the orang people like us, you know, orang Iban or the orang Bidayu, you know, menyumpit and whatever. And suddenly there's the monkeys and everything, put llamas together, you know, it looks so exotic. It looks so nice on a pamphlet. And can you imagine a tourism pamphlet just, you know, showing KLCC?
How does that make you feel, though? As an Iban, do you feel commoditized? Do you feel
yes.
It's almost like human safari?
I always tell that to my student. But it's not, I mean, sometimes it's not intentional. Sometimes it's about education. I mean, after listening to what I'm saying today, I'm sure some people are saying, we have been doing that, you know. We romanticize it. I cannot imagine going to Sabah and Sarawak, not looking at an orangutan, and not, you know, they imagine, I remember last time they said, they imagine when they come down from the airplane, they will see this Iban in their full costume, the man in with his sumpit and all the tanjak means the, you know, the headgear and everything, and the girls will be all in there. And suddenly I'm one of those old Iban, so every time I go for a lecture and I introduce myself as Iban, I'm very proud of it, and of course Malaysian first, Iban, they say, Iban, you mean, they always, you know, they can visualize me always, the Iban. Yeah, I said yes, that Iban. And then they said, you know, the one that dance. And I, you see, it's how we image are created by the media. It's just like when we look at Africa. When I told my student, think Africa, what is it that comes straight to your mind? They will say poverty, people, you know, kids, you know, bloated tummy, and then... So that is exactly what we... So commoditizing ethnicity is another thing that we... I mean, it's a totally different topic, but to a large extent, that is what we are doing. And I do hope that some of us, especially the educated ones, you know, realize that they are just like anybody else, you know. Don't expect them when you come down the Kuching Airport or Miri Airport, you know, expecting us to be like that. But now it's not too bad. In the old days, it was, I mean, in the 80s, if you look at the advertisement, it is like that. And if you notice the media, they have always portrayed us as that, you know. It's only during Gawai that we come out. Election time. Yes, we will come out during election. And I love that, you know. Suddenly you see all these long houses fall, you know. And then, sorry, because you guys in the urban centers, nobody want to look at you. But when you come during that 1 week of election time, you will see how these, you know, long houses fall, suddenly on the media. So be fair, you know. They are educated. Bumiputra minorities. They are also poor Bumiputra minorities. We are just like any other Malaysians.
Your personal story, Dr. Madeline. How did you do so well? And you're one of the, you know, you're not terribly young. You have, you know, come a long way. But and were opportunities present for you at that time?
That's a very interesting question. My father is a policeman. If you notice, most of us Dayaks, the Dayaks, the Ibans and anything, that is the only job opportunity available to us that time. Why? That is the only job where they don't require you to be educated.
Right.
All right? So you're just good in the jungle. The British loves us. The new, Rangers, Malaysian Rangers, they also think that we are the best military guys. So my dad was a policeman. But I have never lived in a longhouse. But of course, my family, we have longhouses. So I've always moved in the urban areas because my dad is a policeman. So I will move, like, I will be in Kuching, Miri, and I've always attended, the Catholic schools. But in Sarawak, we have, of course, the Catholic and the Protestant, and I'm from the St. Thomas's and we all the same school. Mm-hmm. So that opportunity probably... open a kind of something that's very different, that not many of us have that opportunity, because a lot of times most of them will be in rural school. So when I passed my primary six, Yeah. Suddenly somebody said, oh, somebody passed her primary disease. Okay lah, maybe it's just, you know, it's just something just happened. Okay, never mind.
It was luck.
It was luck, probably. So during my time, we had primary six.
Boy, were they surprised.
Yes. Then it was like, form three. Eh, she got, you know, grade one. Something must be right somewhere. Then it was form five. Then I went to form six. And it was UKM that offered me this opportunity to study at UKM. I've always been in, what do you call it, an English medium school. Suddenly when I came to UKM, oh boy, I have to learn all Malay and everything is in Malay. But that is part of challenge, I guess. And I'm quite okay now with my Malay. My English was a bit bad. My Iban is terrible. So I really cannot speak. They call me Iban Murtad. So UKM provided me with that opportunity. So I was taken in as a student. I was given the opportunity to be a tutor. Then that's when I start. You know, I had an opportunity to be sponsored to go and study overseas. I went, did my master's in the States, and I did my PhD in England. So that's basically, you can consider me, I'm one of the few really blessed Iban. And to me, this is how it's my time to give back. Right. Sharing anything. And I love my job.
I can hear the passion coming through. Are poverty and income inequality two of the biggest obstacles to bring about national unity?
Poverty and inequality. To me, poverty is more of inequality. So if you were to prioritize inequality first, then poverty. Poverty is much easier to address. Because one, technically, poverty in Malaysia, poverty is based on what we call poverty line. Poverty line, which is a proof, or you set a poverty line. It's so easy to reduce poverty. You just reduce that line, and somehow overnight somebody just become non-poor. You see, in Malaysia we have this line, we call it poverty line index, which is about, for peninsula is about 800. So anybody below that, you're considered as poor. You see, technically you can just lower that 800, right? You just put it 200, so there will be no poor people. Okay, that is the technical side. And in terms of policy recommendation, it's slightly much easier to think of policies. You can do programs and things. But inequality requires you to do a lot of restructuring. How do you make, like in the old days, the government adopted was what they call it, a restructuring of societies. Because the Bumis have always been in the rural sector. So bring them to the urban sectors. But it's not easy to bring the Chinese or the Indians back to the rural sector for restructuring purposes. So these are things that to a certain extent, it is more difficult as compared to poverty. And inequality is always about opportunities. That's why the issue or the term Bumiputra and not Bumiputra, you know, it's such a very simple term, but it is really like defining Malaysians as a whole. Why is it people are so, you know, so hung up about it? It's because, as I said, there is an attachment to it. There is an economic opportunity attached to it.
Do you think we will ever get rid of that?
It will take some time because the policy has been there for the last, 30 years, and a lot of us, some of us are very, very comfortable with it. Some of us are very, very uncomfortable with it. So if you ask, it will always be on ethnic line. The Bumis welfare, we want it to stay on. If you ask the non-Bumis, no way. You know, it has really created a kind of a division in our city. But the new Malaysians have come up. If you notice on the internet or thing, we have seen this young Malaysian saying, we should do away with it, you know. As I said, I'm really iterating. If you're poor, regardless, you know, if you're rich, you know, you should not be just because you're an Iban. You should, you know, you get all the scholarships, and you're anak wat Tan Sri or Iban Dato or whatever, yeah. You know. So, and there are so many poor people out there. So, yes, ideally, of course, you know, as a researcher, as a Malaysian, I would love to see this. We should do away with it. I don't like to be associated. Like you say, although as much as I would love to be identified as an Iban, because people always forget, because my name is Madeline Burma,
yes.
Something that I'm from Myanmar. So that's why. So I always have this problem. So to a certain extent, yeah, I mean, I do hope that in the long run that we should do away with it to have a united Malaysia.
So the 11th Malaysia Plan will be announced in June.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the last one before the year 2020.
Yeah. Yep.
What should be the target or our aspirations for Malaysia?
For Malaysia as a whole, first, of course, I would love to see Malaysia as a very united, because I'm in the National Unity Consultative Committee. We have seen how, to a certain extent, we look at the media, social media, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the issue of ethnicity is always being discussed in, and now the way the discussion it has gone to a point like very hurting. You know, ministers can use terms that they should not be using, you know, giving statements like this ethnic group, that ethnic group, regardless on both sides of the divide, right? Now, as a Bumiputra minority, because we are working on, you know, giving proposals to the government, I really hope that as much as I want to do away with the ethnic divide and ethnic issues, I would like to see, you know, in this 11 Malaysia plan, one specific policy for the indigenous communities, you know, just for these minorities, you know, because what we have right now is only Bumis and non-Bumis, which I think is already, we have achieved what we have wanted to achieve to a certain extent. But now the indigenous people, the indigenous communities, and the orang asli, look at them, you know. If you look at in Sabah, the Muruts, in Sarawak is the Penans, you know, the highest incidence are among these three groups. So we need a policy, specific policies, not for the country as a whole, but policies to help them to catch up, to narrow the gap, so that the gap between them and mainstream Malaysians will not be that wide. Because as it is, you know, you can't go to Sabah and Sarawak and see the situation and not feel, wow, you know, is it really this, you know, until and when we still have this kind of divide, we cannot call, I mean, they will be asking now, you know what the joke is all about, they call it, not Bumiputra, now is they can, we are not first class Bumiputra, now they have classes of Bumiputra, which I thought was not really nice, but we're talking about people on the ground.
And that's how they feel.
It is how they feel. Yeah. And people like me, I'm a researcher. I listen to them. Of course, we do mention that, although I may not mention it inside this report, but in our seminars and things like this, we do highlight that, you know. You cannot let people feel that I'm a Malaysian, but I'm a second-class Malaysian. I'm a Bumiputra, but I'm a second-class or third-class or fourth-class. So we should, you know, how can we make everybody feel being included? So this is where the inclusiveness of our policies, especially in the new economic model, that was really very much covered in the NEM. And I do hope that it will continue to be will be the focus for the 11th Malaysia plan.
That's our last chance, right?
Yes, to be a developed nation.
That's right. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Madeline Burma, Associate Professor, Faculty of Economics and Management, University Kebangsaan Malaysia, speaking to us about ethnic minorities in the development process on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.